You're listening to episode number 68 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where it's all about smart, efficient training so you can crush your cycling goals. And now, your host, Coach Rob Manning.
All right, welcome to episode number 68 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where we make real science real simple. I've got a great show for you today where I'm going to discuss why cyclists don't need traditional base training, how you can go about alternate base training and stay away from the traditional base model, how you can maintain your fitness throughout the season, and people who, I'll give you a little bit of a hint as to who can actually benefit from that traditional base training model, along with defining all of those terms. But before I get there, I've got a couple of quick announcements here for you. The website, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal blog, the episode show notes receptacles, online training plan store is all available at tailwind-coaching.com. And you can find the podcast show notes for this episode at tailwind-coaching.com/68. And there's going to be a number of interesting links for you to follow in those podcast show notes, so keep that in mind. Also there, you can find the sign up for the Tailwind Coaching newsletter, tailwind-coaching.com/signup. And don't forget to share that link with your friends, because that will help to get you some free coaching advice, free workouts, fitness information, and all kinds of special offers delivered directly to your inbox. And I do not sell email addresses, so don't be afraid of that. You can visit the online training plan store while you're there for complete training solutions for all your major season goals, grand fondos, races, group rides, strength training needs, and general fitness goals. And of course, don't forget to take advantage of my training plan support. That'll get you a coach for a small percentage of what it would normally cost you. Normally, it'd cost you $100 a month for me to write your training plans and coach you through them. In this case, you buy an off-the-shelf training plan and I coach you through it, help you adapt it to your goals, help you modify the training plan, help you move days around, etc., etc. And that'll cost you $30 a month. And that scales down a little bit if you purchase in bulk. If you have any questions about what I'm going to talk about today, you have questions in general, or you're looking for a fitness consult, or you're looking for one-on-one coaching, contact me at coachrobdc@gmail.com. You can follow me on Strava. You can follow me on YouTube. You can follow me on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, facebook.com/tailwindcoaching, and you can follow me at CoachRobDC on Twitter. And don't forget, if you're listening to this on iTunes, or even if you're not listening to this on iTunes, head on over there and rate the podcast 5 stars. Every 5-star rating I get helps me move up the podcasting ranks. By doing that, it lets me reach more people. And the more people I get to reach, the more people get this information, the more people get to learn to ride their bike a little bit better, have more fun doing it, and that's really why I do this. Remember, this is a free podcast. I don't charge for the privilege of listening to this, so help me get this free information out there. And of course, this podcast is sponsored by Stages Cycling and Stages Power Meters, so if you check out their power meters, you're in the market for one of them, pick them up, head on over to tailwind-coaching.com/68. Click the link for Stages and purchase through there. It is an affiliate link and it'll contribute a few pennies to the hosting and bandwidth costs of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast to help keep it free. And of course, for those who are loyal, there is always loyal listeners to the podcast. That is, there's always a discount code at the end of the podcast. You can find that at the end of the episode show notes. So let's get rocking and rolling here. We are talking about traditional base training, and we're talking about why it is or is not beneficial for your average, everyday Joe Sixpack cyclist. Well, what is traditional base training? Well, imagine this. You just finished your season. Now, you're not going to race cyclocross. That comes without saying, because your season never ends if you're racing cyclocross. It's the end of January here, and there's still... we just finished with cross nats, and in the European circuit, cyclocross is still going on, so keep that in mind. But for most people, the season ends September, usually the last races, maybe October, if you're doing Grand Fondos or some kind of rides like that. Basically, what happens, you end the season, September, October, maybe November, and you take a well-deserved rest between the holidays, maybe from a couple weeks before Thanksgiving to the New Year. And then once you get back, you haven't ridden a lot for 6 weeks or so, and you feel nice and refreshed. So what do most people do? Many, many, many people have the concept where when I come back, I have to do long, slow distance miles, the zone two traditional base miles. And for many, many years, this has been the off-season of choice, if you will, for all kinds of cyclists, from pros down to Cat 5 racers, endurance riders, crit riders, Gran Fondo riders, Brevet riders, you name it. People have undertaken that long, slow, zone 2 aerobic training ride, off-season kind of base training. And I'm here to tell you that that is a bunch of malarkey. It's a 10-penny word, especially this point in the morning. But that's ridiculous. There is no reason for most people to undertake that kind of base training. And we're going to talk about why. Well, first of all, let's talk about the concept behind the Zone 2 low, slow base training model. The concept behind that low, slow Zone 2 training method is the fact that in the base phase, you are trading intensity for volume. So let's take your average Cat 4, Cat 5 racing cyclist or your average Gran Fondo rider. This is typically somebody who is riding their bike anywhere between 6 and 12 hours per week. Usually they may or may not be following a training plan, but imagine they are. And they're essentially saying, well, you know, it's base period. I don't need to put in a lot of stress. I just need to put in some zone 2 miles. So for example, if you have somebody who's riding their bike, let's take the average of that. They're riding their bike for about 9 hours per week. Now, during their base phase, they're trading intensity for volume. That would mean that if they are going to increase the amount of volume and decrease the amount of intensity, they would probably have to go from riding 9 hours a week to riding somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 18 hours per week at a lower intensity, and just to get the same training volume or the same training volume in terms of training stress score, really. The easiest way to think about this is if you think about your training in terms of training stress score. So if this traditional base plan works on the idea that you'll substitute volume for intensity, let's use this for an example. If you're doing a ride that counts for 50 training stress per hour, which is very, very light, that's truly an endurance type ride, and you're doing 4 hours of that, you're now doing 200 training stress, 200 points of training stress. All right, so that's 4 hours of riding nets you 200 training stress. If instead of doing that long, slow, traditional base plan, you decide to go for a more high-intensity type base plan, and I'm not saying that you have to be doing intervals every day, but a more high-intensity type base plan of 80 training stress per hour, to get to that 200 training stress, you only have to ride for 2.5 hours. Now, that's worth noting that if you're going to cut the training stress almost in half, you're going to cut the intensity, I should say, in half, which is the concept behind the traditional base training model, you have to add almost 100% more. You have to add about 75% more training time or volume in order to get the same training stress. If you were to say, well, I really don't have a lot of extra time to add, I'm just going to lower my intensity and I'm going to ride the same amount, you're going to lose approximately 75 training stress off that. So you'll essentially do, for a 2.5 hour ride in a traditional base phase, you might do 125 training stress, when in theory you should be doing 200. So all of this is designed to illustrate the fact that the traditional base training plan, where you cut the intensity and you raise the volume, really needs a significant increase in volume on the order of probably 50 to 75% more training time. That's a lot of time. If you're one of those cyclists who does 9 hours a week, and now you're being asked to do 50 to 75% more, you're in the neighborhood of 13 and a half to 18 hours a week. A lot of amateur cyclists don't have time to do that. And I sure know I don't have time to do that. Most people have plenty of obligations that they need to tackle instead of spending 18 hours a week riding their bike. Things like family time, shuttling your kids to and from sports, going and watching those sports with those kids, playing with those kids, taking the dog for walks, spending time with your significant other, going to work. Simple things like going to work actually put a big damper on your training time. I mean, unfortunately, that's the case. But the bottom line here is, if you don't have the extra time to add, you have to look at some other option. All right. The second part of why the traditional base training plan really doesn't tend to apply to amateur cyclists is the fact that the amateur cyclist really does not need that huge aerobic base each year. If you've been riding for any significant period of time, you will have built a relatively efficient aerobic base. Now, any significant period of time, as I've mentioned to many of you who've sent me questions or sent me emails asking questions, I consider anybody who has ridden for less than 3 years to really be a true beginner in terms of cycling. And that's not meant to be a put down. It's meant to simply say that if you haven't ridden for more than 3 years, your body really has not adapted yet to the stresses that you can put on it. Your body has not learned the neuromuscular control, the motor control skills that it needs to actually perform at a high level. Your body has not had time to develop a really sufficient reserve of muscular endurance to really be able to handle the kind of stresses that you know that you can put out to it. All right. All of those things are built over years, not over the course of a couple of months of base time, but over years. So essentially, the longer you've been riding, the better aerobic base you have by default. Now, this is illustrated nowhere better than those guys who are in their like 50s, 60s, 70s who show up on your local group ride. And you look at them and you go, dude, we're going to smoke this guy. This guy's going to have some trouble hanging on here. And they're the one that outlasts everybody on that ride. They're the guys that can climb, maybe not fast, but they can climb continuously for hours at a time. They can continue to hang on your wheel. No matter what you do to drop them, they're suddenly somehow still there. It's because these guys have a massive, massive, massive aerobic base. All right. An amateur athlete, an amateur cyclist does not need that huge aerobic base to be rebuilt every year. The amount of work that you'll be doing, the higher intensity work that you'll be doing, the more interval work that you will be doing will actually build that base to a sufficient level. And I know most of you are sitting there going, but all the pros go out there and they do their 4 and 5 and 6 hour training camp days. Great. Let me ask you something. Are you a pro? Seriously, are you a pro? I mean, some of you may think that you are, and that's okay. And if you have the time to do those 4, 5, and 6 hour training rides, God bless you, more power to you. Most of us don't. But the reason an amateur doesn't need that same aerobic base is because a pro cyclist, needs to be able to perform at a high level, a high intensity level, following up to 200 kilometers of that aerobic base type effort. So let's take some of my favorite races, the spring classics. Let's take Milano San Remo, which will be coming up here in a couple of months. Milano San Remo is almost 300 kilometers long, almost 300K. Think about that. It's a race that's somewhere between 7 and 9 hours, depending on the weather, depending on how fast the peloton rolls. It is insanely long. When does the decisive move come? Any of you that watch pro racing at all and have watched Milano Sanremo in the past will know that the decisive moves come in the last 20K, maybe? De Cipressa, the Poggio, and of course, the sprint on the Via Roma. Those are where those efforts come in. And that's at the end of almost 300 kilometers. If you're a pro and you don't have a sufficient aerobic base after 275K, when you're called upon to make an attack on the Cipressa or the Poggio, you can't do it. The other reason that the pros need this kind of stuff is because many of these guys are racing stage races, where you could be doing up to a week, maybe 2, maybe 3 weeks of back-to-back efforts of 150 to 200 kilometers per day, and you'll need to be able to make high-intensity efforts at the end of each one of those days. That's why pros spend most of their December, January, February, unless, of course, they're racing at Tour de San Luis or at Tour Down Under. That's why many of these pros are making sure that they do these long 4, 5, 6 hour zone 2 aerobic base intervals. Because they have to be able to deal with 4, 5, and 6 hours worth of work and then still have energy and impetus left over to make high intensity type moves. Now, granted, pros also have that, you know, multiple year huge aerobic base that I talked about a minute ago, because they've been pros and most of them have been riding from the time they were, you know, barely able to mount a bike, let alone, train and race. So they have that huge aerobic base and they're essentially tuning up that aerobic base each year. Why does all of this not apply to an amateur cyclist? Because aren't amateur cyclists really just smaller version of pros? Absolutely not. Amateurs, in any way, shape, or form, even the Cat 1, Cat 2 guys, with the exception of a few races, like the Battenkill Pro-Am, which for years was about 105, 115 miles, something like that, for the Cat 1 Pro guys, they had to make pretty significant moves at the end of that 105 miles. So for some outlying cases, this may apply. But for most amateurs, you are not making a race-winning move after 200 kilometers worth of work. In fact, most amateur events are barely even an hour and a half. Now, granted, Gran Fondos, for the most part, will run into the 4 or 5 hour mark. Some road races will run longer than that hour and a half mark. However, most amateur events are things like criteriums, 30 to 45 minutes. Cyclocross races, 30 to 45 minutes. Road races, maybe an hour. Circuit races, under an hour usually. But even those Gran Fondos or other longer events are less based on aerobic capacity or base aerobic capacity than they are on a couple of other metrics. Those other metrics are the real key important things that you need to work on during your base phase so that you can actually become efficient and comfortable using them. So, what are those metrics that are the limiters for most amateur events? I'm going to say that for the most part, let's talk about any event across the board on the amateur calendar. Let's even talk about Gran Fondos. Let's even talk about longer road races. The main limiters for most amateur events are going to be your functional threshold power, or your lactate threshold power, and your VO2 max capacity power. Those are going to be the absolute two limiters. Functional threshold power, and I'm going to throw a link to what is functional threshold power in the podcast show notes here. functional threshold power, very simply, is the amount of power you can produce at your aerobic threshold. And that is a very highly trainable metric. Now, when I say aerobic threshold, a bunch of you are sitting there going, but if it's aerobic threshold, then I got to be doing my base work so that I can... Not necessarily. There is a distinct difference between power you can put out at your aerobic threshold. See, functional threshold power is, in theory, or I should say in practice, more likely, very similar to critical power, and those two, without getting into the meat and potatoes difference, the intricate details of the differences between them, functional threshold power or critical power, depending on how you see it, is simply the amount of power you can put out for 1 hour using aerobic means. The concept behind the long, slow base mile aerobic base training is not necessarily to raise the amount of power you can produce aerobically for an hour, but it's to condition your body to resist fatigue for multiple hours. Now, that's a very, very important distinction, and I'm going to say that again. The long, slow distance of base training, the aerobic base training, long, slow distance type paradigm is not designed to raise the amount of power you can produce aerobically for 1 hour, that maximal amount, which is your functional threshold, but it is designed to increase fatigue resistance. And it's designed to increase the fatigue resistance at pretty much anything below functional threshold power. So that's a really, really important distinction that needs to be noted. And one of the misconceptions about that traditional base training paradigm, which is, oh, well, if I do all this base training, my functional threshold's going to go up. Well, maybe. Chances are it won't, but maybe. What you're trying to do in that traditional aerobic base is create that fatigue resistance so that you can later on build a sufficient functional threshold power base on top of it. All right, now as I mentioned, there's a second component that most amateur events are really limited by, and that is VO2 max level power. While functional threshold power is the amount of power that you can produce for 1 hour without going anaerobic, so basically it's the maximal aerobic power you can produce for 1 hour, your VO2 max, and as I discussed in episode number 66 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, you can find that at tailwind-coaching.com/66 if you're curious. There's also a link in the show notes. VO2 max is considered your maximal aerobic power, or the maximal amount of power you can produce in any kind of aerobic capacity. And that is very limited. That's generally limited to about 8 minutes maximum. And beyond that, you're starting to tap into anaerobic reserves. So VO2 max power, as I just mentioned, being 8 minutes long, that's approximately 1/3 to 1/4 of your average amateur event, maybe 1/5 of your average event. So anywhere between 20 to 30% of your average amateur event. And now I'm talking races here. For Grand Fondos, you may be saying that this thing is going to take you 4, 4.5 hours, and VO2 max power may not be important. That couldn't be more misinformed, but I'll get to that in just a minute. But VO2 max, the maximal aerobic amount of power that you're able to produce, is also highly trainable, as I explained in episode number 66. Generally, we have a genetic predisposition as to how much or how high our VO2 max capacity is, milliliters per kilogram per minute. What we really train is the amount of that we can really use and begin to use efficiently. Now, I mentioned a moment ago that, yeah, maybe this is 20% of your event. Well, what if you're a longer distance rider, you're a Grand Fondo contender, you're a longer road racer? This VO2 max capacity is also incredibly important for those moments when you're forced out of your functional threshold realm. You're forced above that functional threshold. You have to have sufficient reserves of VO2 max capacity in order to make those moves and sustain those types of efforts. Additionally, that VO2 max or that aerobic, that VO2 max level power is essential in allowing you to increase your functional threshold power. Again, as I described in episode 66, as we raise that VO2 max ceiling, we raise the functional threshold. And the reason why is that functional threshold is simply a percentage of your VO2 max. So it might be 85% of your VO2 max. Now, if we continue to push up that FTP without raising VO2, there is a limit to what how high we can raise that. We may only be able to get to 88% of VO2 max. That may be the upper ceiling. It may be the upper limit before we start bumping into the ceiling. If we raise that VO2 max another 10 points, suddenly we have another 10 points of FTP to work with. So that FTP and VO2 max are really the true limiters for any amateur cyclist. And I am going to say, I'm going to go out on a limb and say any amateur cyclist, whether or not you're a Grand Fondo rider, whether or not you're a endurance rider, whether or not you're a long distance racer, whether or not you are a crit racer. And that brings up a point. If you're one of these really short duration racers, crit racer, track racer, there are going to be a few additional limiters to you. And those are typically anaerobic type limiters, zone 6-7 type limiters, but those are for a different podcast, and we'll tackle that at some point in the future. But what is the point of all of this discussion about the limiters for your amateur cyclists? Why do pros do this kind of slow training? Why do you as an amateur cyclist want to avoid that kind of slow training? I'm going to go with a very simple adage here, and that is, you are what you do. You've heard of you are what you eat. Well, the same applies for any kind of cycling fitness. You are what you do. If you train slow, you will perform slow. If you train fast, you will perform fast. Okay? Slow base miles will make you slow. Faster, harder intervals will make you fast. Why is that the case? Why is that the case in cycling? Well, it's the case in any kind of fitness. It's the case for people who go to the gym and lift. If you don't lift sufficiently heavy weights, you will not gain strength. If you do not ride sufficiently hard, you won't gain speed. And that simply goes back to the fact that your body is designed to only increase its capacity for any kind of exercise or work if you demand it to do so. Your body is designed to be as efficient as possible. And if it has no need to go faster, it doesn't want to build the machinery, you know, the biomechanical or the biochemical machinery, the intracellular machinery. It doesn't want to build and maintain that if it's not needed. So that essentially takes us to the next point, which is train what your goals are. So if you're a criterium racer, don't waste time during your base period putting in 4-hour long, slow distance base rides. It's not worth it. It's a waste of time. You're better off jumping on the trainer and going hard for an hour. Knock out 80 training stress for an hour, 85 training stress, 90 training stress for an hour if you're feeling up to it. Instead of jumping on the trainer for 4 hours and knocking out 150, 200 training stress. Instead of going outside for 2 hours and knocking out 100 training stress. You are what you do. Now, the other side of this, if you're spending weeks to months doing this long, slow, zone 2 endurance type aerobic riding, those low intensity rides will actually erode your high intensity fitness. Remember a moment ago, I said that your body is designed to be as efficient as possible. It doesn't want to maintain machinery that it doesn't have to. If you're not asking your body to go hard, your body will simply lose the ability to go hard. Your body will say, well, geez, I don't need to store all of this high intensity energy substrate, so I'm just going to get rid of it because it's taking me extra metabolic energy to maintain. If you go to the gym, you lift heavy for a couple months. You start to get really strong. You start to put on some muscle mass. And then you spend a couple of months just saying, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm just going to do some really light weights and I'm going to tone up. I hear this all the time in practice. I hear this all the time from clients. I just want to tone up. I don't want to get bigger. So I'm going to lift light weights and do high reps. I guarantee you, given a couple of months of that, you will lose almost all of the strength that you developed. And I'm going to put it to you this way. What would you rather do? Would you rather maintain 90% or 80% even? Let's say even 80. Let's even go 75. Would you rather maintain 75% of the fitness that you built last year, that high intensity fitness? Or would you rather work to rebuild a full 50% of it after you let it erode? Eroded high-intensity fitness is much harder to rebuild than it is to maintain. Maintaining high-intensity fitness is easy. You just have to do the same intensity as the fitness you're trying to maintain. So if you're trying to do VO2 max, if you're trying to maintain VO2 max fitness at 250 watts, you only have to do intervals of 250 watts. If you're trying to rebuild up to 250 watts, you have to do work well above 250 watts. Trust me on this. It's much easier to maintain that high-intensity fitness than it is to rebuild it after you spend 2 or 3 months doing low-intensity zone 2 aerobic base. Now that you understand why that old-fashioned base training, that old-fashioned zone 2 base training is not maybe the best choice, let's get into a compromise. Let's talk about a compromise that you can use to maintain some of that high-intensity fitness, but still make sure that you build a sufficient aerobic base so that you're end of season goals, let's say, or your mid-season goals are actually achievable. And that's actually not too difficult to do with a concept called reverse periodization. So reverse periodization is, I mean, obviously many of you have heard of periodization, where you're doing specific work at specific times, and you are very specifically adapting different parts of your energy systems based on whatever you're training for at that moment. And this gets, this reverse periodization kind of touches on why people love the, it's early in the morning. Still got a lot of stuff to clear out here, so I apologize for that. But let's touch on for a moment why people love that base mile paradigm. And the reason that a lot of people like that base mile paradigm is it's really unstructured, and it kind of lets you just go out and do. And that's okay. I've got to make a note of this because I know people are going to ask me about this. That's okay. You can still do intensity work without doing these structured interval workouts. Now, I've talked about this a couple of times in my Zwift videos, and that's basically the concept behind fartlek training. The idea behind that is just basically go out, let the terrain dictate your intensities. Even if you're doing a base ride, say you're going to go out for 2 miles and you want to do a quote base ride, if you could see me, I'm doing air quotes right now. If you're going to do that, at least pick a route that will challenge you. Put some climbs on it, put some descents on it, put some flat headwind areas on it. Let the terrain and the conditions dictate your intensity. If you come back and your overall intensity factor is like 0.7 or something like that, that's basically telling you you completed an endurance ride, but that may have included 3 or 4 higher intensity efforts. Maybe you had 3 or 4 5-minute climbs, or you spent 8 minutes pushing into a headwind and you were a little bit over threshold at that point. That kind of unstructured intensity can really add benefit to that base mile time. And again, a lot of people love that base mile time of year because they don't have to worry about, well, I need to make sure I get my 9 by 3 minute intervals in at 120% of my functional threshold power. In this case, you're actually getting the intensity, but you're letting your terrain, you're letting your weather patterns, you're letting the wind, you're letting other people, if you ride in a group, dictate that intensity. And that's okay. That's okay. But if you're one of those people that just can't stand the idea of, oh, I gotta have structured intervals all the time, I gotta have structured intervals all the time, let's talk about reverse periodization. Reverse periodization is a concept where if you look at the traditional training paradigm, the traditional training paradigm has you building aerobic fitness first and adding higher intensity intervals on top of that. So you're going to build zone 2 efforts first. You're going to add zone 3 efforts on top of that, a smaller amount of zone 4, a smaller amount of zone 5, smallest amount of zone 6 and 7 to cap it off, and it ends up looking like a pyramid. In this case, we're talking about sort of cutting the top off the pyramid, flipping it upside down, and mixing it up a little bit. So, the concept of reverse periodization is quite simple. Reverse periodization is designed to really build that VO2 max ceiling first. And again, you can see tailwind-coaching.com/66 or episode number 66 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast for some much, much greater detail about this. But building that VO2 max ceiling, building your body's capacity to handle, to take in, to utilize and metabolize oxygen first during the winter months, and then adding longer base miles during the season. And this is inherently true in climates where there's a lot of cold weather, there's snow, there's ice, there's things that keep you from getting outside for those long rides, because most of us really don't want to be on the trainer for 4 hours at a clip. All right, I can pretty much tell you that is a really common sentiment. So the idea here is to build the high intensity work first, raise the VO2 max ceiling, raise the functional threshold power, and then once you're able to get outside, build that aerobic resistance that those base miles are intended to do. And aerobic resistance, that aerobic endurance resistance, can be built in to those long rides during the summer, during the spring. And those long rides you'll be doing intervals in anyway. So you end up with almost a perfect storm of a kitchen sink type workout where you get a little bit of everything. All right. Consider that if you're outside and you're doing intervals, the time in between those intervals is really going to be additional endurance base work. All right. Now, again, this concept works because you've spent most of the winter maintaining the high intensity work that you had done last year and even building further upon that high intensity work that you've done last year. You've raised your VO2 max ceiling. You've spent some time raising your percentage of that, which is your functional threshold. And of course, you spend all that time on the trainer doing that, where you can get very, very specific, very efficient workouts done. Now, once you have all that, you're going to say, but if I go outside, then I'm going to be way behind the group. Actually, you're not going to be way behind the group. you'll probably be ahead of the group. Now think of why. If you spend most of your winter on the trainer, maybe 5 to 6 hours a week, raising your VO2 max, raising your functional threshold power, you're going to go out and you're going to hit a group of riders. Maybe they've spent most of their time riding those slow base miles. When it comes time to hit the climbs, when it comes time to hit the headwinds, when it comes time to hit the sprints, you're going to have that increased functional threshold capacity. You're going to have that increased VO2 max work capacity. Will you be able to ride all day long with that capacity? Maybe not. But you'll be able to tire those guys out so much quicker than they will tire you out that you will have the upper hand. All right, and as I said, as you continue to ride longer and longer days outside, you'll be gaining more and more of that endurance, resistance capacity, and that ability to handle higher stresses and higher power levels and tensions. The other benefit of the reverse periodization concept is it allows you to build on technique work during the winter on those short, high-intensity trainer sessions. Technique work, of course, builds overall efficiency, which you can actually use to increase your amount of aerobic resistance once you get outside. And of course, all of this means that if you're doing a reverse periodization type plan, you have more time to build a functional, foundational base. Now, this is another key point to not mix up. Do not mix up an aerobic base with a foundational functional base of fitness. The foundational functional base is really truly your core strength, your strength and endurance work, your force production work. And that stuff is really both on and off the bike. It does not have to be only in the gym, although I do recommend if you're a cyclist, get your butt in the gym, do your core work, do your strength work, do your strength endurance work, do your force production work, do your power work. All right, I'm a huge advocate of that. Most of you know that. But the nice thing about this reverse periodization is because you're doing less work, you're doing higher intensity work, you're doing fewer hours of it, you still have time and your body is still able to absorb that foundational functional strength and that foundational functional base of fitness. You're able to build that while still maintaining your high intensity fitness as well as your functional threshold power and building your VO2 and all that kind of stuff. So reverse periodization may indeed be the key for most of you who are amateur cyclists who are looking to mix it up, who are looking for a little bit more strength in spring, and who are looking to have maybe a little bit less time on the bike during these winter months. I know many, many, many of you hate being on the trainer, and I can empathize with that. Believe me, I can. But it's very feasible to build a solid foundational base of fitness within 6 to 8, maybe 6 to 10 hours per week. And that includes in the gym, doing core work, doing strength work, doing intervals on the trainer, doing even sweet spot work on the trainer. All right, you don't have to spend 18 hours a week to build a solid fitness base for the next year. Just mix up your paradigms a little bit. Now, finally, who can actually still benefit from that traditional base training? Well, if you are an upper category racer, you're an upper category stage racer, you will probably still benefit from that traditional base type of work, that 2 to 4 hours, 2 or 3 times a week of that just aerobic base riding. If you're looking at events that are multiple days, Green Mountain Stage Race is a good one. If you're racing the upper cats of Green Mountain Stage Race, you really better have a really solid aerobic endurance resistance base. That's a key. If you are a really, truly competitive Gran Fondo rider who's looking at maybe trying to win something like Gran Fondo New York, Gran Fondo New Jersey, any of the Gran Fondo series, you may want to consider doing one or two of those base rides per week. If you're one of those Cat 1 or semi-pro, whatever you want to call them, long distance racers, guys who are taking on Battenkill at 115 miles. I mean, they don't do that anymore, to my knowledge, but if you were doing something of that nature, for those of you here in the New Jersey area, if you're really looking to win something like the Fool's Classic or Hell of Hundreden or any of those, then you may consider adding some of that traditional base training to your repertoire. But for the most part, most of you who listen are the amateur type cyclists, and you guys really, really don't need that traditional base. Really, all it's going to do is erode your higher intensity fitness, and it's not really going to prep you for the season as much as you think it probably will. So, if you have any questions, thanks guys for listening to me. It was really a pleasure, and I'm glad you stuck through it. If you have any questions, feel free to email them to me at coachrobdc@gmail.com. You can post them on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, or you can post them to me on Twitter at coachrobdc. Don't forget, you can find me on Strava. You can find me all over the place. And again, the episode show notes for this podcast, tailwind-coaching.com/68. And don't forget to rate the podcast on iTunes and check out the website, tailwind-coaching.com, for all the downloadable training plans, strength training plans, and all that good stuff. Again, thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for listening. And I will be talking to you again real soon. Keep the shiny side up. Keep the rubber side down. Ride strong, ride fast, and enjoy your base period. I'll be talking to you guys again real soon.